I learned how to work with my dyslexia. Then I pause. But it's not something I tell a lot of people, like the team and stuff. It doesn't affect my ability to do my job.
That makes a lot of sense.
But that's not all there is to it. There are other reasons. In for a penny, in for a pound. I also don't want people to see me differently, I say, serving up that raw truth. Or to think I can't do something or handle something because of a learning disability. Like, what if Everly thinks I can't prep for a media interview for some reason? Or Coach thinks I'd have trouble reviewing plays? I can do those things. Then I give an easy shrug. But honestly, I don't have the kind of job where reading is really a big issue, so I guess I'm lucky.
I get that. And we don't owe every part of ourselves to the world. You don't have to share it with anyone you don't want to share it with.
She's quiet for a beat, and I can see the cogs turning in her mind. It's coming. I know it's coming. Anna tried this tactic with me, and I need to cut it off at the knees or it'll piss me off. You're not going to tell me to listen to audiobooks, are you? I ask it defensively. I feel it defensively. Laughing, she shakes her head.
No, I'm not. I don't think you told me this so I could give you book recs. You told me because you wanted to share.
I did. I want you to know me, I say as my chest floods with a new emotion. Something warm and soft. Josie understands me, and that's rare. It's not magic, though. It's not fate. It's not even chemistry. It's effort. She takes the time to listen and puts in the work to understand. But I like to think I understand her a little more each day, too. You're going to research the fuck out of this, aren't you? I ask, teasing her. She gives me a look like I've nailed it.
You know me so well.
Because she's let me in. And that's rare, too. I want to treat it like the gift that it is. On the way home, she pulls a tube of lipstick from her little bag and slides it across her lips as I drive along our block. I steal a glance at her as she presses them together. They're pink and shiny now, and I'm fucking aroused. Great. Just great. When I pull into the garage, I make up some excuse about checking a group chat with the guys. I'll be inside in a second, I say. She goes ahead, and when my dick settles down a minute later, I follow. She's on the couch already, waving the list. It's not like I want to be anywhere else but near her, so I join her. She grabs one of her pens and crosses off item number 2, but only half of it.
We both did this tonight,
she says, giving me the pen so I can finish the strike through. We did, I say, seconding her as I draw the rest of the line. Together we look at the list of 10 items with 3 completed so far. 1. Have a one-night stand with a sexy stranger. Already did that. 2. Overcome a fear. Take a class you can't prepare for, baby. Psst, improv class. We can check that off now. 3. Make a friend who's nothing like you. You learn the most from them. Already did this one too. When I give the pen back to her, she taps the 4th thing on the list.
Are you ready for number 4?
I shudder at the thought. It's a simple item, but a terrifying one too. I draw a soldiering breath. I'd better be.
We can do it next weekend. You have a game tomorrow, and also on Sunday, so I'm guessing next weekend is better. Sunday morning?
A surge of happiness floods me from this detail. She knows my game schedule. But then I try not to read too much into it. We live together. It's just good sense to know your roomie's sched. Strategic, too. Next Sunday works, I say.
Good. We can plan this week.
Of course, I say, amused at how thoroughly she does homework for everything in her life. She caps the pen, looks at the clock on the wall with a wistful gaze, then says,
I should go to bed. I have an early meeting, then I'm working late at the library tomorrow.
She pushes up from the couch, but pauses, like she wants to say something else. Or maybe do something else.
Wesley,
she begins in a voice full of promise. My chest seizes with a feral sort of want. A hunger rises inside me, climbing up my body. Yes, I ask hoarsely.
I never showed you the video of the pigeons.
A laugh bursts from me. Do you want to show me pigeon porn?
It's worth your while,
she says, a teasing lilt to her tone. I pat the couch and she returns, sinking back down onto the gray cushion. This time, she's a couple inches closer to me. This time I catch her scent, the fading notes of cinnamon, twined with vanilla. Her hair, I think. The combo scrambles my brain, and it takes every ounce of my willpower not to tug on her hair, dip my face to her neck, inhale her. Especially when she leans closer, clicks on the folder on her phone, and scoots another inch nearer. We dip our heads toward the screen, but I'm acutely aware of how close she is as she shows me a video of birds banging. It's not what I expected, I say when it's over. But then again, she's not either.
I know, right?
Then she pulls back to meet my eyes once more in the near dark.
You're not either.
And tonight, I decide that's a good thing. Same to you, I say, then narrow in on her glasses. They're a little smudged, probably from the day. She doesn't need me to do this, but I do it anyway. Your glasses, I say, then reach carefully for them. They're dirty.
Oh.
She says, raising her chin toward me, a subtle way of giving me permission. Carefully, I hold the delicate arms and slide them off her face. Her breath hitches. She swallows noticeably as I bring them to my mouth and blow on them. Lifting the hem of my shirt, I gently rub the lenses, cleaning them. Her gaze drifts down to my stomach, visible now. Did I do that on purpose? Maybe. She likes to look, and I like the attention. A lot. I take a good long time cleaning her glasses. When I'm done, she shudders in a breath, then holds in another one as I glide them slowly, carefully, back on her face. We stay like that, inches apart in the almost dark, neither of us moving for several stretched out seconds. Till she says,
Thanks. They're all better now.
Good. This time she leaves, heading off to her room under the staircase, while I go the other way, trying not to think of her as I get ready for bed. No such luck. She's exactly what I think of after I shut the door, change, and slide between the sheets. She's precisely what's on my mind as I turn off the lights and deal with all this lust for my roomie. That's starting to feel like a little more than lust. Chapter 21. Shirtless Driver. Wesley. How can one person make so much noise? It's like a pack of howler monkeys have barged into my home. Are they ripping cabinet doors off hinges? Swinging from the chandelier in the living room? Rubbing my eyes, I squint at the clock. It's not even 7:30. No one should be up at this hour. As sunlight streams horrifically bright through the bedroom window, I grab a pillow and yank it over my head. I'll just go back to sleep in 3, 2...
Fuck!
The scream doesn't just ring through the home. It echoes through the halls of time, reverberating back to the Stone Age. I jump out of bed and fly down the stairs as the next round of the soul-rending
Fuck, fuck, fuck!
Chorus continues from the kitchen. I skid along the tiled floor where Josie's hopping on one foot, gingerly clutching the other.
I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm okay.
She says, but she's clearly not okay, since she's breathing out frantically and grasping her bare foot. There's a puck on the floor along with her canvas bag, where a tube of lipstick has escaped, along with some sunscreen and a glasses case. Ah, shit. I think I know what happened. Did you stub your toe on that puck? I ask, advancing toward her like she's a thrashing animal.
Yes. No, I mean it fell on me.
She bites out, and it's like she's trying to hold in all the pain. But no one on the planet can hold in the abject misery of a jammed toe. Let me see, I say. She peels her hand off the toe. It's bleeding a little, just along the nail. Still, it's all my fault. Grabbing her hips, I lift her onto the counter, then reach for a clean towel and press it to her toe. Carefully, I hold the towel in place as my brave woman fights off some rebel tears. Just another few seconds, then I'll get you some ice. She nods and I hold her toe, rubbing her other leg. She's wearing a flowy skirt today with a white fitted t-shirt. If I'd known librarians looked like her, I might have spent more time in the stacks. I check one more time. No more blood, I say.
Good.
She says quietly. I scoop her up into my arms and carry her through the kitchen to the living room. She doesn't protest. She just groans, still in obvious pain as she wraps her arms around my neck, clinging to me. I tighten my hold on her so she feels safe. Yeah, that's the only reason. You need ice and a band-aid, I tell her, shifting into triage mode.
I need to go to work. I have a meeting.
It's gonna swell if you don't ice it.
I'm going to lose my job if I'm late, and the bus comes in 15 minutes, and I already woke up after my alarm.
When I reach the couch, I set her down gently, sliding my arms out from under her. 10 minutes of ice, Josie, I say in a tone that brooks no argument. I hightail it to the bathroom upstairs, taking the steps two at a time and grab a band-aid, hydrogen peroxide and Neosporin, and a couple of washcloths. Back downstairs, I snag an ice pack from the freezer. Briefly, I set everything down and slide her glasses case, sunscreen, and that lipstick I'm obsessed with back into her bag. Then I pick up the puck, a signed one I left here last night before we went to improv, so I wouldn't forget to drop it off at the animal rescue this morning for a fan who volunteers there, and set it on the counter. She must have put her bag on top of the puck this morning, then it fell off when she grabbed her bag. Just a guess, but it seems logical. Supplies in hand, I return to Josie, putting the first aid items on the table. Lie back on the couch. Let me clean it up. She complies, then offers me her foot. I pour some hydrogen peroxide onto a corner of the towel and clean the cut as she bravely rolls her lips together, keeping in her whimpers. With that done, I gently apply some Neosporin. I wrap the band-aid around the little toe. A tiny sound escapes her lips. Good job, I say, then rub my hand along her exposed calf as I reach for the ice. It's going to be cold, I warn.
I had no idea,
she says dryly. And that's my Josie, sassy as fuck. I press the pack to her toe and she grits out a long,
oh, God.
This is my fault, I say.
It's the puck's fault, but also mine since I grabbed my bag off the counter to get my lipstick at the same time that I was trying to open the fridge for a yogurt since I was running late. The puck fell off the counter and landed right on my foot,
she says as I keep the ice pressed to her little pink toe. My gaze stays there, studying her feet. I'm not a foot guy, but her toenails are all polished and aqua green. The big toe sports a decal of Alexis from Schitt's Creek. I scan the other toe. David. These are cute, I say.
Thanks,
she says through gritted teeth.
At least it wasn't David the puck killed.
Thank God for small miracles, I say. She draws a big, shuddery breath, then closes her eyes. It's clear this hurt, which I get.
Did you know swearing mitigates the pain of a stubbed toe?
She asks. That's so her to say that. I clasp the towel firmly, the cold seeping into my hand. Let me guess, you researched that?
Not for me, for a patron.
A patron wanted to know that?
He was British. He stubbed his toe on the Oxford English Dictionary, which he'd left on the floor by his carrel, and he cursed up a storm of buggers, bollocks, and bloodies. This was back in grad school. I worked at the school library, and I learned swearing actually is a natural pain reliever.
I guess that explains why hockey players curse all the time. A faint smile settles on her mouth. She must be feeling a little better. Let me see if I've got this right, I begin, relaxing a little now that she seems to be okay. In your first few weeks here, you've been attacked by a couch spring, a cactus, and a hockey puck?
Yes. Why can't I be attacked by, I don't know, a lifetime supply of free chocolate, or too many orgasms to count?
I could help you with the last one, I say, then shrug. Hypothetically.
I know you could. Hypothetically, my O supplier.
Funny how a while ago I was sure she didn't want another night with me. Now I'm pretty sure she might have. Which is good, in a way, but also bad because it just makes everything a little bit harder. A little bit more tempting. Temptations like discomfort, though. I'm learning to sit with it. She's quiet for a little bit longer as we stay here, my hand on her foot. With my free hand, I rub her other leg, sliding it up and down her shin, soothing her. At least, that's what I tell myself I'm doing as my palm slides over her soft skin. What if I let my hand glide a little higher, past her knee, underneath her skirt? Would she part those thighs ever so slightly? when my fingers brush a damp panel of lace, lace that I'd want to push to the side, slip past, tear off. She takes a deep breath, then opens her eyes.
I'm okay.
But the word cuts off as she stares at me quizzically.
Wesley?
Yes. Her eyes roam up and down me.
What exactly are you wearing?
I glance down for the first time, noticing my clothes, or lack thereof. I believe these are called boxer briefs.
You've been in boxer briefs this whole time? I must really be in pain if I haven't noticed.
She says. Then she stares a little longer, and I think about where all the odd socks go and what kind of toothbrush I should buy next, as I will my dick not to impersonate a flagpole.
You sleep in just boxer briefs?
I do.
And you flew down the stairs in boxer briefs?
I did.
And again, I didn't notice till just now?
I smirk. Evidently. Sighing, she wiggles her toe.
I must be better, since I'm noticing my surroundings.
She pushes up.
Thanks. I should go finish my makeup and catch my bus.
I reach for her hand to help her up. No.
No what?
You should finish your makeup and meet me in the garage. I'll give you a ride. She grins ever so hopefully.
In your boxer briefs?
You wish.
Well, yeah.
I head upstairs to brush my teeth and change. But I don't change too much. Sometimes you just have to give a woman what she wants. I come downstairs in a pair of running shorts and a workout tank. I sail past the fridge and grab her a yogurt, a spoon, and a cloth napkin. When we get to the car and I turn it on, I hand her the food. Breakfast is served. Then I flash her a cocky grin as I take off the shirt and back out of the garage. Her eyes pop.
Drive me every day.
Maybe I will, I say. Then I amend it to definitely when she takes out her lipstick and slicks some on. It's like she knows what it does to me. That night I return home from an exhausting hockey game where a puck didn't attack me, but the boards did when I slammed into them during the third period. We lost, but I'm done replaying what went wrong. I did that already in the weight room when the game ended with Christian. As we did push-ups and deadlifts, he went over a few key moments, like when the Phoenix team's star player kept getting the puck, and how we need to keep guys like that on the outside and away from the middle of the ice. Christian was serious about this mentorship thing. But I need to put the captain and the loss out of my head, and I'm pretty good at that. At moving on and taking what I need from a game and leaving the rest behind. I head up the steps from the garage, my shoulders sore, my thighs screaming. Except when I get to the kitchen, I forget all that. There's a note from Josie on the counter. I'm a junkie, an addict. I can't get enough. I grab it, unfolding it in record time, needing my hit.
Dear Wesley, you knew this was coming, right? Of course you knew. Once you said you didn't mind my notes, you really only had yourself to blame. I am a note monster unleashed. And fine, since you never wrote back to my first note and told me five things I should know about you, I decided to write my own damn list of fun facts about my roommate. Here goes. Five things I've learned about you. 1. You were a stripper in a past life. 2. You clearly moonlight as an EMT in this life. That was hot, the way you showed up with first aid supplies. 3. You will be a singer in your next life. You know all the lyrics to songs. I hear you singing when you're wearing headphones. 4. You will never beat the zombies in your video game. Never ever. Sorry, you can't be good at everything. The universe gave you elite hockey skills and teeny tiny video game talent. 5. You are still the most generous person I've ever known. Thank you for the ride to work. Thank you so very much. Your friend, Josie. P.S. I'll send you some ideas for number 4, and next Sunday morning is perfect since it's right before you leave for your road trip.
When I set it down, my skin is hot and my bones are buzzing. From the words, from her knowing the specifics of my schedule, from everything. Without thinking twice, I leave the kitchen, crossing the hallway to her bedroom door, lifting my hand to rap my knuckles on the wood. But before I make contact, I force myself to stop. Frozen in place, a statue of desire, I stay like that, picturing her in her room. Then flashing back to an hour ago with her brother. He's not in charge of my decisions, but what would he think if less than a month into living with his sister, I banged down her door to strip her naked and give her more orgasms than she could count? More importantly, what would I think of me? That's not what a good friend does. Not what a good roomie does. Taking a deep, centering breath, I find the will to walk away. As I'm returning to the kitchen, my phone pings with a message. It's late, so I grab it right away, sliding open the screen. My pulse spikes when I see Josie's name. Is she awake? Did she know I was this close to breaking down the door to her bedroom? I swallow roughly and open the text. It's a voicemail, and I'm both psyched and touched. I hit play.
Hi, I'm probably asleep. I scheduled this voicemail to send at 11:30. You probably have ibuprofen, but I left you two next to the toaster anyway. You should take them after that game. Also, I got you something for next Sunday morning. It's by the toaster, too.
There's a pause. Then I hear footsteps on the recording, and I picture her walking around the house while she left this.
Good night, Wes.
Hardly anyone calls me Wes, but the girl who likes nicknames does now. I don't even know why, but I love the way it sounds on her lips. I head straight to the toaster. I ignore the pills, grabbing the canvas bag instead and reaching inside it. After feeling some kind of fabric, I pull it out, then laugh when I shake open the gift. It's an apron, with lipstick marks all over it. I'm so fucked.
Chapter 22. It's a Thing. Josie. Talia was right. The Great Grimaldi is worth it. A week later, on Friday afternoon, I work with the former magician to help digitize his stage shows from the 80s, full of close-up magic. By the time we've worked through a few VHS tapes, I'm convinced I can turn a glass of water into a deck of cards. Does sharing this with me violate a magician's code or something? I ask him.
Not if you don't tell a soul,
he says, then brings his finger to his mouth. He still sports an old-school magician's mustache and an air of elegant mystery. I'll protect your secrets, I say.
Very good,
he says, then whips his cape around him and vanishes. Okay, he doesn't vanish, but he's just like a character in a fantasy novel, so I like to think he does. As soon as I join Talia at the reference desk, she tips her chin toward a group of teenagers spread out at a table in the study room. Save me. There are some high school students working on a research project on the use of artificial intelligence in healthcare, and they have no clue where to go besides social media. She says, adopting a "this is making me batty" smile. Please help before I melt into a puddle of dismay. Way to speak to my soul. Plus, this is why they have me, why the foundation made this grant. On it, I say. And if I can impart any wisdom in this lifetime, it's that there are many, many better resources than social media. I help the group of teens find reputable resources online, and I barely even look at the clock. Fine, I check it a few times. I'm looking forward to shopping with Everly after work today, more than I usually look forward to grocery shopping. I took her up on her grocery store offer. We're going to hit her favorite hidden gem store in the city. I can get supplies for my project with Wes, and I kind of can't wait to tackle the fourth item on my list. Maybe because I like baking, or possibly because I like our blossoming friendship? Spending time with him makes me feel seen. I haven't felt that often, not growing up at least, so it's a little thrilling. His messages are too. We've been trading recipe ideas all week for number 4, even when he flew to Vancouver for a quick away game a few days ago. He returned yesterday, though. As the day winds down, a new message lands on my phone from him, and seeing his name makes my pulse spike. Since it's quiet at the desk, I read his text right away, feeling a little bubbly.
Wesley, take that back. What you said last week about my video game skills? I've been killing it today.
Josie. Really? You got shot 42 times by the undead in the abandoned warehouse the second you started the game last night.
That was an improvement.
All I can say is, don't quit your day job.
Damn, woman, way to hit a man when he's down.
Need a band-aid for your wounded ego?
Evidently. Will you put it on me?
If I can find one big enough.
If I'm ever roasted, remind me that you should be the MC.
I hate roasts, but deeply appreciate the compliment.
Agree, roasts are evil. Like, you're my friends and you want to tell me why I'm awful?
And make fun of me in public?
But pranks on teammates are another story.
That is such a guy thing to say.
I am a guy.
I know, Wes. I know.
BTW, you're the only one who calls me Wes.
And?
Don't stop.
I won't, Wes. I almost feel like I could text him all afternoon, but there's a patron heading toward the desk, so I slip my phone back in my skirt pocket and return to work. When the day ends, I tell Talia I'll see her tomorrow, since I offered to take a Saturday shift for Eddie in research so he could go to his husband's mini-golf tournament. Then I leave, passing the fire station where the guys are washing their truck again and doing it shirtless again. I smile again. They wave back, then I catch a bus to a small store in Russian Hill. Everly's waiting at the door, wearing tailored slacks and a pretty blouse, but dressed down with Converse sneakers. You look like a cocktail of business and casual, I say, admiring her outfit. I like you. I think I'll keep you around, she says. The part of me, that part of everyone that wants to be liked, does a little jig. Good. I'm very keepable. She gestures to the entrance, waggling her phone. Fair warning, I'm a little into coupons. Me too, I say, and we're clearly new besties as we head inside. She's another thing I like about San Francisco. I'll miss her when the job ends in 3 months. Actually, it ends in 2 months now, but I try not to think about the end date too much. This was always going to be a short-term gig, and there'll be other jobs when I get back home. Besides, there's plenty to keep me busy while I'm here. Like the list. With a basket on my arm, I pick up supplies for number 4, eat dessert for breakfast from time to time with a little more vim and vigor than I usually employ when I'm picking up supplies. You look like you have something fun planned. What are you baking? Everly asks as I grab cinnamon from the spice aisle with an eager hand. Should I tell her? It's not a state secret. A cinnamon sugar puff pastry. Wes and I are making it. I add, nothing wrong with sharing that. We're roomies and all. But that nugget seems to catch her attention more than I'd expect, maybe since I called him Wes. She tilts her head. You guys are baking together now? Is it weird to cook with your roomie these days? Of course, I say, fighting to stay nonchalant. Sometimes we cook together. And I leave him handwritten letters, and he drives me to work, and I give him ibuprofen, and he buys me books, and we're working through my aunt's bucket list for me in our free time. That's all totally normal, right? I guess that answers my next question. How is it living with one of the sea dogs? She asks, a pleased smile shifting her lips. Sounds like you two get along. We get along great, I chirp out, feeling like a liar, even though we do get along well. But I know I'm covering something else up, and it's not the burgeoning friendship. It's the reason I can't wait till Sunday. It's the flutter in my chest, the tingle sliding down my spine, the ache I feel when I'm near him. I'm so glad there's no weirdness, like sharing a bathroom, Everly says as we leave the spice aisle. We each have our own, I say quickly, trying to breeze through this uncomfortable conversation. I know she's not intending it to be uncomfortable, but it is, since I'm keeping a secret from my brother, and in turn, her. And he's not parading around in a towel? I wish he were. No, I say, but it comes out strangled because I would love if Wes did that. He drove me to work again on Monday, and a third time today, shirtless both times, so thoughtful. I didn't think he would, Everly says as we reach the self-checkout. But you know how they make it seem in the movies, the burly athlete walking around in nothing. Flames lick my chest over that image. He never does that, I say, and mercifully the conversation ends when two registers free up. We separate, giving me and my lies of omission some breathing room. After Everly and I both pay and pack our reusable bags, we head to the exit, then to Everly's car parked by the curb. Once we're inside, she drives me home, chatting the whole way. She's upbeat and friendly, but she still surprises me when she says, I've been taking pole dancing classes, and they're so fun. I had a friend who always wanted to do them. Briefly, my mind latches onto those words, had a friend. But quickly, she moves past that, asking, would you ever want to go? Pole and me? Sounds like I'd get another scar on my chin, or my eyes, or my vagina. I'm not coordinated at all. I'm not either, but it's so fun, she says as she pulls up at Wes's home. If you ever want to try it out, let me know. It's a great workout, and I'd love to do it with friends. Her voice seems to wobble a bit there at the end, and I can tell this matters to her. I promise I'll think about it, I say, meaning I'll look into every single aspect of it since I get the sense she really wants me to go. But there's no time to look into it now, since I have to leave in 10 minutes. I don't even see Wes when I unpack the items for our Sunday morning baking session, plus a few extra apples for him as my rent for the week. But I'm not surprised I miss my roomie, since he mentioned he was going to a Sea Dogs yoga class and then heading out for a bite to eat with some teammates. I'll be busy too. My brother's taking Liv for a quick dinner, and I offered to babysit, since the baby's nurse is off tonight. When I arrive at my brother's home, he lets me in, but immediately Liv hustles me away and tells me everything I need to know about newborns. It's an ocean's worth of information, and my head is swimming. By the time she's done 50,000 hours later, I don't know how Christian and Liv are going to have a moment left for their date. I've got this. Now go, I say, shooing them to the door. Call me if you need anything at all, she says. I will, I say. But I probably won't call her. I want to show them I can do this. I owe it to them. The least I can do is help out with the one-month-old twins, after all my brother's done for me. Christian found me a place to live rent-free, after all. That's another reason I shouldn't think inappropriate thoughts about my landlord. I don't need a complication in my life. There's no way I'd land another place to live like Wesley's ever again. As they head to the door, Christian turns back, and like he just remembered to ask, says,
how's the bodyguard? Is he looking out for you?
I'm 26. I don't need looking out for, but Christian sees me as his kid's sister rather than a grown woman. Considering I came to him in tears 4 weeks ago begging for help, I suppose I haven't given him a reason to see me any other way. He's a great roommate, I say as an answer, and I'm ready to rattle off all the ways we help each other to show that it's a give and take with Wesley and me, maybe to show me that it's a give and take. But even after I rack my brain, I've got nothing. What are a few pieces of fruit every now and then when you have a meal planner dropping food off every day? Do I help Wesley at all? Is this whole roommate thing a one-way street, fueled by Wesley's boundless generosity and my unlimited needs? My stomach churns in worry as I add up our accounts. Wesley's made a practice of saving me from the second I met him, the plus one to get into the gallery, the clothes to get out of my half-birthday suit, the cozy room under the stairs to give me a roof over my head. The list of his kindness doesn't stop there. He volunteered to go to improv with me. He bought me a book. He drove me to work when I jammed my toe, and then even when I didn't. My gut sinks. What do I do for him? Tease him about video game skills? Leave him ibuprofen? That's nothing. A dark cloud moves over my head and I frown, so lost in my own gray thoughts that I barely register Christian's response, only keying in when he says,
he can be a great hockey player too.
That knocks me back into sharp focus. Can be? Does Christian think Wesley's not good enough? I'm ready to fire off all the reasons why Wesley's an excellent player. How dare my brother think otherwise?
Yeah, he's good. So good, I think he could be on the first line real soon,
Christian says with obvious pride in his tone.
So good, I think he could be one of the great ones. That dude busts his ass in every game.
Oh, it wasn't a dig. It was a compliment. One of the great ones is huge. Stand down, Josie. That's awesome, I say, pleased that my accomplished brother is impressed by my roommate.
He's gonna go far,
Christian says, and I'm glad, but his praise is another reminder why I really should stop imagining romantic possibilities with Wesley. My brother depends on my roommate for every game. Wesley made it clear, too, he doesn't want to take a chance at damaging a work relationship or hurting the team chemistry.
There is no one more disciplined than Bryant, Christian adds. Did you know he works out after every game?
Did you know I want to lick all those muscles he works? I had no idea, I say with a big cover-up smile as Liv pats my brother's arm, like, enough, sweetie. Babe, I'm pretty sure your sister doesn't want to hear about how many reps you two do at night.
You two do?
I repeat, confused. Christian nods vigorously.
Dude inspired me. I started doing these post-game workouts with him.
Great. Now they're workout partners. I really need to give Wesley some space. His career is on the rise. He probably doesn't have the time to be my list sidekick, but he's too kind to say otherwise. Liv rolls her eyes at her husband. Why don't you tell Josie about his stats, too? Let's go, babe, she says. Then to me, she adds, you're the best, Jay. Seriously, I appreciate you coming by tonight. Anytime, I say. They take off, and Christian's remarks hang over me for reasons he can't know. But for the next hour, I don't wallow in my worries or think about number 4 on the list. I can't think about a thing but diapers and bottles and crying newborns and pacifiers and how to hold 2 tiny humans at once. It's literally the longest hour of my life, and by the time my brother and his wife return, I'm ready to collapse into my bed. But seeing my brother with his arm wrapped around his wife and her shoulders lighter from the date fills my cup. They needed this, and I'm glad I was able to help, even though I am so not a baby person. When I finally make it home to a quiet house, I'm sure I'll crash right away on my bed. Instead, my mind fast forwards to Sunday morning, to my plans with Wes. I wince when I finally realize why I've been watching the clock all day. It feels like I'm counting down to a date with him. I've been letting it feel that way. I've been bathing in that feeling, sinking into the warm water of foolish romantic hopes. But it's not a date. It can't be one. And the more I act like it could be, the more I could hurt him. He's on the cusp of greatness, while I'm only a girl trying to get out of her comfort zone. Fact is, I've been trying to get out of that zone for a while. It's been 2 long years since Greta reached for my hand one rainy day in her little bungalow in our small town in Maine, more tired and frail than she'd ever been before, the days left for her on Earth inevitably shrinking, and said, "My sweet girl, I'm going to give you something that I desperately want you to have." "More time with you?" I croaked out, tears leaking down my face. She smiled sadly, shaking her head, then said, "If only I could." She squeezed my hand as hard as she could, which wasn't hard at all, then pointed to a blank book on her nightstand. "This is for you, so you don't spend too much time thinking about me." "That won't happen," I said, "but maybe it should." Then she handed me a sheet of paper that was on top of the book, a beautiful handwritten list of the top 10 things I never regretted, and she said, "Think about doing it, baby. Sooner rather than later." It was like she knew I'd drag my feet. She was right. I stalled out. I didn't do it. I didn't even try. I let it sit in the blank book undone, untackled, unseen for most of 2 years. I could blame the grief. I could blame my master's degree. But the blame is all mine. I'm the kind of person who takes her time before she does something. I started the list without Wesley, and truly, I should finish it on my own. That's the point, after all. I know how to do things solo. I know how to be invisible. I spent most of my life that way, except for when I was with my aunt. I swallow past the uncomfortable knot in my throat, then breathe out hard, past the residual pain of missing. A pain that's lessened over time, but hasn't fully abated. Once the emotions subside enough, I peel myself off the mattress, trudge to the bathroom, and wash my face. When I'm makeup-free, I rub in vitamin C serum and night cream till my face is shiny. I look in the mirror, square my shoulders, smile. There, I can do this alone, just like I read books alone, study alone. I return to my room and take out the list once more, unfolding it. In the quiet of the house, I stare at the 4th item once again. eat dessert for breakfast. I can't ask him to join me. Wesley is Mr. Discipline. True, he had ice cream the night we met. But now that I've seen his meal plan and witnessed the way he treats his body like a temple, I can't ask him to break his rules again. Besides, the list was supposed to help me get out of my comfort zone. Wesley doesn't need to change. I do. I draw a deep breath and leave him a voice memo rather than writing a letter. Hey, I was thinking about the list. You don't have to do this, any of this, especially number 4. It's not fair for me to ask you. You don't need to wake up early or anything. I can totally do it alone. Also, you really should let me pay rent. And if you don't, I'm going to have to donate the money to your favorite animal rescue or something. Just watch me. And so I don't sound ungrateful, I add in a brighter, cheerier voice. But seriously, thank you for everything you've done so far. I hit send. That's a start. I can do more, though. Just to show him I appreciate all he's done, I get on my laptop and I hunt for tips on Wesley's zombie video game. I dive into Reddit, I hunt through forums, I rappel through all sorts of tips on how to improve his gameplay. When I'm done, I send him a list of tips in bullet point form on how to play better. There. It's a small thing, but at least it's a thing I've done for him, not the other way around. Chapter 23. Tell Me to Stop. Josie. In the morning, I wake up to a handwritten note under the door.
You're wrong, Wes.
A sob climbs up my throat, rising higher. I don't even know why I'm on the verge of tears again, but maybe it's the simplicity of his response, or the clarity. Possibly it's the way he makes me feel okay about all my messy thoughts and chaotic emotions, the way he distills them into something clear. I want to say thank you in person, but it's game day, and I don't want to disturb his routine. He'll have morning skate, then he'll nap, then he'll go back to the rink for warm-ups, and then it's game time. Good thing I know how to be quiet. I'm a veritable cat as I get ready for my own work day. I zip up a black pencil skirt with a cherry print on it, toss on a red twin-set sweater, then twist my hair into a bun, sliding a hairpin along the side to hold it in place. I slide on my glasses, then pull on pink fuzzy socks so I don't make a sound as I move around the house to do my makeup and gather my things. I don't even head into the kitchen to eat. The sound of the fridge opening might wake him. I'll grab a bagel or a bar on the way to work, and I'll send him a voice note once I go. With my makeup done and my lashes long, I pad back into my bedroom, grab my bag and a pair of black flats, and carry them to the door. But as I'm reaching for the knob, the sound of footsteps pounding down the stairs grows louder. My pulse surges annoyingly. My heart slams frustratingly. I don't move. I'm still a woman on the cusp.
Where are you going?
He calls out, coming closer. I have to work today, I say to the door. I feel so foolish now for the note, for all the feelings, and for, well, being so very me. He comes closer. When he's inches away, I close my eyes, inhaling his scent. He must have showered when he came home last night. He still smells soapy clean, but a little sleepy, too. If I turn around, will he be shirtless again? With his ink on display, the music notes, the sunbursts, the dog. The thought is too tempting. That's not why I turn around, though. I turn because he came downstairs. I turn because he showed up. I turn because I want to. He's wearing a gray t-shirt and basketball shorts. His hair is a wild mess, like my heart. But his eyes laser in on me with a ferocious intensity.
Why did you say all that? In your voice memo?
It's direct, zero words minced. I hold my head up high and speak from the heart. Because you have done so much for me, and I don't want to feel like all I do is take. He hauls in a long breath, then sets his arm behind me on the door. My eyes drift up to his biceps, so close to me, to a vein pulsing along the iron muscles, to the way he's leaning into me, and to the ink on his body. I've never asked him about his tattoos. I wanted to the first night, but it felt too personal. Maybe soon I will.
You don't see what I see,
he says, but the scales are tipped so heavily in his favor, and he has to see it. He must feel it. You give me rides, and you give me a home, and you carried me to the couch and took care of my foot, and you offered to do the list with me, and you helped me into the improv class when I couldn't bring myself to do it. I just don't do... I can't even finish and say, enough for you. He shakes his head, eyes hard, and it's the first time I've seen them that way. Jaw ticking, brow tight.
Who told you you're not good enough?
That wasn't what I expected. What do you mean?
Who said that what you do for someone else isn't worthwhile?
It's stern, powerful. I don't have an answer to that, so I shrug, since I'm still knocked off kilter by him. He lifts his other hand and gently runs it along my neck. It feels so good. I melt into it.
Josie?
He says, his voice firm and passionate, but like an admonishment, too. I don't know, Wes, I say, answering him at last, my voice a raw scrape.
Just know, it's not fucking true.
His words are a balm. Emotions rise in my chest yet again. I roll my lips together to seal in all these feelings, but it's hard to keep a cap on them when my heart is so soft for him. Wes, I just want to be helpful, I say. He doesn't answer right away. He stares intensely, touches me tenderly. Then he takes his time before he says,
My whole life is hockey. My whole life is this sport. Do you have any idea what it means to me to have fun?
You went out with your friends last night, I point out.
I know, and they're fun, but I mean, separate from hockey. Separate from work.
His jaw tightens. He clenches his teeth. Then he grits out.
You're not the only one getting something out of this friendship, okay?
He sounds almost angry. That's so unlike him. He's not an angry person, but maybe it's more like coiled restraint. Yeah? I ask softly. His eyes hold mine.
You're definitely not the only one.
He runs his fingertips down my jawline, and I shudder, then close my eyes. I don't want to go to work. I want to stay here with him touching me by the door, preventing me from leaving by the tractor beam of this dangerous desire. Last night, I swore I'd give him space. I swore I'd let him focus on becoming one of the great ones. I want to do that. I truly do. And yet, when he slides that hand along my neck down to my throat, I can barely remember a moment in my life before this one.
I want to do this list,
he says. Husky, determined.
I want it too. I need it too. You have to believe me.
I swallow past the heat that's building inside me, the sensations racing through me, the want that has me in a chokehold. I do, I say. He lifts a dubious brow.
You sure?
I'm sure, I say, then emphatically I add, I believe you. He drags his palm along my throat, his thumb pressing lightly against the hollow of it as he says,
Don't underestimate ibuprofen, or the thoughtfulness of the fruit, or watching me play.
He runs the pad in a half circle along my heated skin.
Or video game tips.
He breathes out hard, then shoots me a lopsided smile.
Fuck, I love those tips. Do you know I play video games to unwind? It relaxes me before games and after games.
I had no idea, but this info delights me. I didn't know that.
I kind of get lost in video games, and now you've helped me play them better.
He says, and he's sharing this so easily, while touching me so seductively, while talking to me as a friend. I feel so reassured and unmoored all at once. His hand roams back up me so that his fingers brush one side of my jaw, his thumb the other. After a long, lingering beat, he takes a breath, then says in the most vulnerable voice,
There's some promo material Everly sent me, a PDF, for an upcoming event we're doing in Las Vegas. It's kind of long, I had the computer read it to me, but I want to make sure I didn't miss anything.
My heart clutches. I get it, what he's saying, what I can do for him. Can I read it for you too, as a backup? It comes out more eager than I'd expected, but I'm giddy for the chance. He nods.
I'll send it to you.
Want me to do it now? I ask breathily, eager to help. He shakes his head, smiling softly.
You should go to work,
he says.
We can go over it tomorrow. I leave around noon for our road trip. We can do it after we have dessert for breakfast.
He's still staring at me with his eyes blazing.
Unless you're backing out of number four.
It's hardly a question. It's more a challenge. My chest floods with warmth as I shake my head. I'm not, but that's hardly enough, so I add, thank you. I needed that.
I had a feeling,
he says. Then his tongue darts out, catching the corner of his mouth. I watch the tip, my body going up in flames. His smile is downright wicked as he says,
about what you said last night. I appreciate you looking out for me, but just because I follow a regimen doesn't mean I'm rigid.
I'm learning that about you. I admit quietly, grateful he flew down the stairs and came to me.
Good.
He's silent for a moment, his mouth tight. Then he adds,
I don't always let people see me.
I hear him, and I hear the subtext too. He's letting me in. They see you as easygoing and a hard worker.
Yes.
He admits, but there's so much more to you than that. He just shrugs, but it's an admission of sorts. Impulsively, I rise up on tiptoes, clasp his face, and run my thumb along his scruff-lined jaw. I'm giving something to him. Touch, just like he gave to me. My thumb traces his jawline. I'm slow and lingering, and even though the clock is ticking, I watch him, savoring every detail. The way his eyes close slowly, how his lashes brush against his face, how a slight tremble seems to run down his body. But before I let go, he grips my wrist, turns his face to it, and opens those heat-filled eyes, holding my gaze. He brushes the gentlest kiss to my wrist. I gasp. It's a whisper of a kiss, and yet it's everything. He leaves another, taking his time, pressing his lips to my forearm, then one more, and his tongue flicks against my flesh. And finally, he gives a deeper, open-mouthed caress of a kiss from my elbow all the way down to my palm. Chills erupt down my spine. I can't breathe. I can't move. I am undone. He drops my hand.
You should go,
he says firmly, his tone making it clear I need to leave for me and also for him, because if I stay, the kiss won't end. With a reluctant nod, I tear myself away, open the door, and race down the steps, feeling like tomorrow isn't a date. It's something else entirely, something I can't even name, but something I want desperately down to my very bones. It's not a date. It's the next step in this unusual friendship. Still, makeup is always a good idea. In the morning, I put on a cute sundress with pockets, twist my hair into an artful messy bun, slide on some mascara, and of course my signature lipstick. I tuck the tube into my pocket and head to the kitchen to do some prep, like preheating the oven and prepping the pastry strips. 15 minutes later, footsteps echo on the stairs. My heart sprints. I touch up my lipstick. I hate dry lips. Then set the tube down on the counter as Wes strolls into the kitchen at 8 a.m.
I'm never up this early,
he says, yawning as he scrubs a hand across his scruffy jaw. He's wearing gray sweats and a blue t-shirt that hugs his pecs and reveals those steely biceps I want to curl my hands around. But I won't. We're here for dessert. That's all. It'll be worth it, I say, tying my apron tighter. It's covered in tiny illustrations of cake.
It better be, woman,
he says, then waggles his phone at me.
Okay if I play music?
Not a record, I ask.
I have a playlist I like, some new tunes.
Do it, I say, and he sets it on the counter into a phone holder, then sends the music to his speakers. It's something upbeat and not too screechy. A folksy guy voice full of longing. I think it's that Ben Rogers he's been listening to lately, and I like it. Wesley grabs the apron with lipstick marks all over it and ties it on. You wear that well, I say. He tugs at the bib, giving me a pointed look.
Another thing you did for me.
I roll my eyes. Please. He grabs my hand, shakes his head.
Nope. You did this, and I like it.
There's that tone again, commanding, certain, like he was in bed. But like he is in the kitchen, the car, and the street when he wants to drive home a point. Well, I figured we should make a I cut myself off before I say date of it, course correcting to some fun of it. Eating dessert for breakfast is one of the simplest things on the list.
Sometimes the simple things are the best things,
he says, sounding like a saying on a kitchen towel, but a true one nonetheless. I've been thinking about this item, why it's on there. Maybe because it's easy, but also because it was something my aunt and I used to do together. I say, opening up and sharing more of my time with her, to remember her, to celebrate the days we spent together.
Maybe she wanted you to keep doing it.
He stops, then adds,
with a friend.
Maybe. Most of the other things are new, I say as we mix together sugar and spices in a small bowl. But this one? I gesture with the wooden spoon to the bowls on the black counter. This was our thing. We made cakes and pies, cupcakes and cinnamon rolls. We made chocolate croissants, which is dessert, just masquerading as a breakfast food. Wesley goes thoughtful, humming even. What's that for? He shrugs.
Crazy idea. But maybe she knew all along, somehow, some way, that you were going to do this list with another person. So maybe number 4 was never meant to be a solo thing. Maybe none of it was.
My chest glows at the thought. My whole body feels warm, like I'm looking at the past through rose-colored glasses. But it's a past that earned those glasses, a past that deserves the fond filter. You might be right, I say.
I'm definitely right,
he says with a cocky smile I want to kiss off. And even though we came temptingly close yesterday, we're not going to today. This is friendship. He's said as much before. But when Wes slides in closer to me, his shoulder bumping mine, there's nothing easy about this moment. There's nothing simple about how much I want him to shove the ingredients off the counter and kiss me ruthlessly. We mix for another minute until he moves to the other side of the counter to brush melted butter along the pastry strips I prepped earlier.
You remember how much I wanted the ice cream the night we met?
That night flashes before me in technicolor and fire. I remember.
So when you think I'm all disciplined, just remember I like to bend the rules,
he says, and those words slide down my spine like a brush of his fingers. The innuendo curls through me too, settling between my thighs, a fresh new ache. I'm learning that about you, I say as I layer the cinnamon sugar mixture on top of the butter.
And you like it?
He retorts. Reasonable question. I tug at my apron. That oven is warmer than I thought. You think so?
Sure do. I think you like getting me to break.
He muses. My throat is dry as I try to make the treat. Try but fail because I can't focus. Why do you say that? His gaze drifts down to his apron.
The apron?
How exactly is the apron getting you to break? He's quiet for a while, for several seconds, maybe more, clearly contemplating. He breathes out hard, his forehead pinched. I watch him, searching for the answer as to why he thinks the apron is my way of getting him to break. Then he lets out a long-held breath and shrugs, fuck it style.
Because you know I can't stop thinking about this,
he says, gesturing to the lipstick marks all over him. You think it was a subliminal message?
I do.
Was it? I thought it was funny when I bought it, considering how he's always looking at my lips. But maybe that was my mind playing tricks on me. Maybe deep down I knew it wasn't intended as a joke, but rather as an invitation to kiss me again. And I hope, I truly hope he's RSVPing as he crosses to the counter, picks up the rose gold tube behind me, and then comes closer. My chest squeezes, and heat floods every cell in my body. He's holding the tube in front of me, and I can't stop staring at the lipstick, at his hand, at his eyes, at the blaze in them. Wes, I say, desperate. He groans.
Yeah.
I didn't go to the gallery to get your name to thank you, I confess, and his beautiful brown eyes flicker with wild hope as he waits for me to finish. I went to get your last name so I could see you again. His smile takes its time turning wicked, turning satisfied.
I had your scarf all ready to take to your friend's apartment, along with a note to ask you on another date.
The double confession is like fireworks lighting up the kitchen, Sparks rush through me from head to toe, chased by a whoosh of desire, the thrill of reciprocation. I back up another inch so I am against the counter. After he sets down the lipstick, he grabs my hips and lifts me up on the counter, stands between my thighs, spreads them open with his hips.
"This is a very bad idea,"
he says, like he's fighting with himself. But I'm not on his side. I'm already on the other side of this battle. "Or a good idea," I offer in a flirty whisper.
"Tell me to stop,"
he mutters as he unties my apron, as the song slows to a moodier beat, as if in tandem with us. I slide a palm up his chest. "Don't stop."
"Tell me no."
It's almost a plea. I shake my head, smiling, inviting. I'm saying yes. With a sigh of acceptance, he reaches behind me for the lipstick, lifts the tube, and says,
"Then maybe we can just bend the rules." Chapter 24. A little lipstick, please. Wesley. This is playing with fire on so many levels. Sure, she's my teammate's sister, but more importantly, in a few short weeks, she's become my friend. A good one at that. Most of all, she's my goddamn roommate. Giving in to this lust is such a risk. It's a massive complication. We'll be sharing this kitchen, this living room, this home through the end of the year. Every second I see her in my house could be uncomfortable. And yet, I don't stop. I go. I gather up the hem of her peach sundress in one hand, my other hand holding the lipstick tube. "This gives me an idea," I muse as I push up the fabric, revealing more of her lovely thighs.
"A very bad one?"
she asks, turning my words right back on me. I lean in closer. "A very good one." Her bright, blue eyes flash with excitement, with filthy hope.
"Well, don't leave a girl hanging."
That's my Josie, full of sass and fire. My bold, funny, daring one-night stand. The woman I couldn't get enough of. The woman I was desperate to see again. Right now, I try to think of her that way rather than as the woman who's inextricably wrapped up in my life. Letting go of the cotton material, I sweep a hand behind her, pushing ingredients, the cutting board, and the bowls farther away on the counter, making room. Then I return to her, sliding my palm down her bare thigh, savoring the way she trembles as I touch her. When I reach her ankle, my gaze shifts to her toes. She fixed the aqua polish on the little pinky, and this detail makes my heart squeeze. It's so very Josie. In fact, it's so very her, I'd better not think too hard on it, or it'll do dangerous things to my heart. Instead, I hike up her foot, setting the arch of it on the edge of the counter so her legs widen. A sharp breath crosses her lips. I groan. Those lips, dear God, those pretty pink lips. I ache to kiss her, with a sharp pang that's so insistent it's borderline impossible to deny. But if I kiss her again, I'll get lost in her. It's best to play. Have fun, bend the rules, not break them. That's my plan, and it's a plan that I've been formulating ever since I set eyes on that rose gold lipstick tube. I travel my hand back up her leg, goosebumps rising on her soft skin as I coast my palm over her. When I skim that hand along her thigh, she shudders, arching her back, lifting up her tits. My mind goes hazy, my skin burns hot. Her reactions thrill me to the marrow. I'm so tempted to kiss her. But I focus on my impromptu plan. I push up the skirt to her waist, revealing her panties. They're white cotton with pink polka dots, and "You're soaked, baby." She meets my eyes with a naughty smile of her own.
"Newsflash, you kind of turn me on."
I smile. Feeling 10 feet tall. Kind of. She purses her lips, then shudders out of breath.
"Find out if it's more than kind of."
With a smirk, I waggle the lipstick tube, then lower it between her thighs. Her eyes widen to moons.
"Are you
going to use this on you?" "You bet I fucking am." She draws a deep breath.
Then bend the rules.
Yeah, she does know me so well. Knows exactly what I'm doing. I'm using a loophole. Technically, I'm not touching her. The tube is. I slide it over the fabric covering her clit. She parts her lips in the most gorgeous O. Then she breathes out a small but feral.
Oh, God.
She's so aroused. So ready. And I am determined to get her off. The top of the tube is angled, so I rub it around her clit, then down the damp panel of her panties. Her eyes flutter closed, and she grips the counter. Her fingers claw at the edge as she holds on while I stroke her, circle her, caress her. She has no reservations, and it's beautiful to watch. Josie is so free in bed, and I'm in awe. She leans her head back, and I don't even think she realizes she's still wearing her glasses. Or maybe she does, and doesn't care. She lifts her chest. Her tits are heaving, her body arching, her foot curling over the edge of the counter. She is shameless, and it's so unbelievably hot. My bones are on fire, and I'm going to let them burn. Mesmerized, I slide the metallic tube slowly, tantalizingly over the white, wet fabric. And then I zero in on her clit. She's moaning and panting, giving in to the way we're playing.
Feels so good.
She mutters. You need it badly, don't you? I say, fighting to keep control, focusing on her pleasure only. Getting her off is all I'll allow myself. Correction. Getting her off like this. This is like cheating on a diet, skipping the bench press at the gym, eating one cookie, it won't ruin me. This extreme focus on her will simply release the tension between us. A valve loosened, that's all. With that squarely in mind, I tease her clit through the soaked fabric. Her noises grow deliciously louder. Soft murmurs, hungry whimpers, a breathy cry. Her thighs are spread, her cheeks are flushed, her hair is falling out of her bun. It's the perfect picture of this forbidden moment. But then she lets go of the counter and I tense all over. I want her to touch me so badly. But if she touches me, I'm so fucked. My control, frayed to a thread already, will snap. She doesn't reach for me, though. With eyes closed, she squeezes her breast. My brain goes haywire, nerves firing, mind popping. As she fondles herself, she parts her lips and whispers,
Wes.
For a split second, I gaze down at her gorgeous mouth, then give all the way in. Fuck it. I let go of her thigh, cover her throat with my palm, and yank her toward me. My mouth crashes down on her as I kiss her wildly as I stroke her with a lipstick tube. I devour her sweet, cinnamon mouth as I rub the lipstick faster. I suck on her tongue. I bite her lip. I consume her. She snakes a hand down, grabbing mine, breaking the kiss and muttering,
Fingers or cock, please.
I am not strong enough to withstand this demand. I am not disciplined enough to resist. I am just unable to stop. I toss the lipstick somewhere on the counter, but before I can even get my fingers inside her soaked panties, she's grabbing my hand, guiding it over her, showing me how she likes it. And fuck, if that's not the hottest thing ever. This woman is using my hand to get herself off, covering her fingers with mine. She knows what she needs, and she takes it from me, working herself over with just my middle